Welcome, my friends, to the Generations Broadcast. Kevin Swanson here with you, broadcasting from the Eastern Plains of Colorado. I'm a father of five. I'm standing for faith, family, and freedom in the 21st century. I realize there's just a few of us left, but freedom's a great concept. And when I talk about freedom, I mean freedom based upon the principles of God's Word, but also a freedom based upon a minimization of government, that is, civil government, in our lives. We've increased the size of government since 1913. That's a certain fact. A certain fact. Folks, we work through August 19th now to pay for our government bills. That is 64% of the GNI is being consumed by taxes, by government spending. That's up from 10% in 1913. No question in my mind, we've increased the size of government substantially since 1913. That's not debatable, friends. It's just the way things are in the modern world. Civil government is six or seven times more important in our lives as a percentage of the GNI than it was in 1913. Here's the second non-debatable point, and that is we've centralized power in Washington. Government is bigger, and number two, we have centralized power in Washington. This year, 44% of the GDP is being consumed in Washington by federal spending. 44%, up from 30% in 1980, up from 6% in 1900. That's right. Right now, we spend 44% of the gross domestic product in Washington, D.C., up from 6%. That's an eightfold increase since 1900. Friends, the mantra has been the same for the last 100 years. Centralized power, centralized power, centralized power. That's undeniable. It's the undeniable truth of modern life. We are owned by the government. We have centralized power controlling every aspect of our lives. And we have voted for it. Americans love centralized power. They love their tyranny. They vote for their tyranny. They have spent 100 years building that tyranny. Because that's what they're all about. Republicans, Democrats, that's what they've been doing for 100 years. Do you understand? This is the worldview. People seek security. They think they can turn the power over to powerful men, and those powerful men will get them security, justice, peace, prosperity. They'll make a great country for them if they just turn the reins of power over to highly, highly centralized forces in Washington, D.C. Well, that, of course, is the biggest lie ever told, that if you turn the power over to government, you'll get security and peace and prosperity once and for all, forever and ever more. I'm sorry. It's just not the way it works. All right, so the undeniable facts of the matter is that government has grown substantially since 1900. We have centralized power in Washington substantially since 1900. And here's number three. Power is now controlled by a smaller and smaller group of men or women. Power is now controlled by smaller and smaller groups. Why? Because we're centralizing power. Because we turn power over to government. Because we centralized it in Washington. Therefore, we're continuing to turn power over to a smaller and smaller group of people. And that's what's happened especially in the judicial branch of the federal government and the state governments. Now, the judicial branches were supposed to rule mainly by judging whether a law had been broken or whether a form of legislation violated the Constitution of the United States or the Constitution of a state government. That was the purpose of the judicial branch. But now the judicial branch doesn't just hold itself down to that anymore. The judicial branch is doing whatever it wants. It's going to make up new laws as it goes. And that, of course, was what happened with Roe v. Wade. They decided that the Constitution had something to say about the right to privacy, and that laws against abortion violated the right to privacy. So I don't know how they got that, but it doesn't matter how they got it. It doesn't matter. Do you understand? They're making law up as they go. And that's what we've been doing for about 100 years as we've been centralizing power in Washington. Well, we want to take a look at what's happening in state governments around America. We're going to talk about California and Proposition 8 in just a moment. But before we do that, we're going to Iowa, and we're going to speak with Bob Vanderplaats on what's happening with Iowa for Freedom as they fight judicial tyranny in Iowa. Let's go to the phones and talk with Bob. Bob, welcome to the program.
Kevin, it's a pleasure to be on your program. Thanks for having me.
You bet. Tell us what's going on with the judicial activism happening there in your state, Bob.
Well, April 3, 2009, the intention shifted in the state of Iowa. And what I mean that by that is not just politically, but also, you know, our moral compass as well, where a Supreme Court redefined marriage from one man, one woman, to that two men could get married or two women could get married, same-sex marriage.
This was the Iowa State Supreme Court then?
Yeah, the Iowa State Supreme Court did this. And okay. When you read through the opinion, Kevin, they clearly legislated from the bench by saying Iowa will be a same-sex marriage state. They don't get to legislate from the bench. Only the legislature gets to create law.
Yeah.
They obviously executed from the bench when they said all 99 counties will follow suit. They don't get to execute anything. Only the governor in the state of Iowa has the executive authority.
Yeah.
And they even attempted to amend the Constitution in our state where they said they're going to hold up Iowa's Constitution to an evolving standard with each generation. And unless my civics taught me wrong, the only people that get to evolve the Constitution or amend the Constitution are the people of Iowa, we the people.
Yeah. Yeah, so they're trying to do it unilaterally themselves. How are they doing it? I mean, how are they attempting it?
Well, how they attempted it, they ruled April 3, 2009 that this was their decision, this was their opinion.
Wow.
There's no law in the books here in Iowa for same-sex marriage. The only law in the books that is still a law in Iowa is the Defense of Marriage Act, where it's clearly one man, one woman.
And that was legislation from a legislature in Iowa.
Right. You know, the legislature, which represents the people of Iowa.
That's right.
They overwhelmingly, I think it was like 85%, voted to affirm marriage as one man, one woman. It was signed into law by our governor at the time. But then you have a court who says, you know what? The people really don't know what they're talking about. The people's representatives don't know what they're talking about. We're going to declare it unconstitutional, therefore allowing same-sex marriage to take place.
Wow.
We have a current governor that basically washed his hands like Pontius Pilate would and backed away from the issue, saying that he believes marriage to be one man, one woman. But the courts have spoken, and if the courts have spoken, you know, we should pretty much bow down to them and just go with whatever they say. Well, to me, that's where you get tyranny, yeah. Not liberty.
Yeah. What is this doing to the balance of powers?
Well, the balance of powers, I think there's going to be a seismic shift in the state of Iowa, and I think across the country, but in the state of Iowa. I think the current governor is going to lose his job. I think we're going to flip the Iowa House from Democrat to Republican. I think the Senate, I don't know if we're going to flip it, but we're going to gain a lot of seats in the Senate. And then in the process, which you may be aware of, I'm the state chair for Iowa for Freedom. We've launched a campaign, an effort to unseat the three Supreme Court justices, or three of the Supreme Court justices, that made this opinion on a retention vote. And I think we're going to vote those three off the bench and send not only a message in Iowa about judicial activism, but across the country about the threat of judicial activism.
That would be significant if you could topple these tyrants. And I think you used the right word, tyrants. Our founders understood that word and used it on a regular basis. We don't use the word much anymore, but let's just call it what it is, tyranny. That's okay to use that word, right, Bob?
Yeah, it definitely is. Remember, our founders, I believe their greatest fear was an out-of-control court system that would take on too much power, where they would usurp the voice of the people and give tyranny versus liberty. And if they'll do this to marriage, Kevin, your private property is up for grabs, your free enterprise is up for grabs, your Second Amendment, how you educate your children, anything a court deems is good for society, they'll just take your freedom away. And that's why we think we need to let our voice be heard here.
And, Bob, let's remember how these guys got in place. I assume appointed in the state of Iowa.
It is, but it's the Missouri system,
okay.
Where basically the Bar Association has a very heavy hand in who gets presented to the governor.
Oh, boy. Okay.
If the governor says, you know what, I don't like any one of the people that you've brought to me, and so he says, I'm not going to choose any one of them, well, then the Chief Justice, who came up through the system, the Chief Justice gets to appoint one of the people that were brought to him or her.
What's the moral of the story? Elect a good governor. I assume that's important.
Sure.
Yeah.
I tell people, Kevin, I would like to see a grand slam.
Yeah.
Number one is, let's send a message on November 2 and vote these three justices up for retention off the bench. two is it'd be great to have a governor who would show executive leadership and issue an executive order that places a stay on an unconstitutional opinion of a Supreme Court to hold a court in check until the people of Iowa have their voice heard through their representatives or through a vote. Three is have a legislature, a conservative legislature, reaffirm the Defense of Marriage Act, but put the caveat on it now without judicial review. And then four is let's have a different way in how we appoint justices in the state of Iowa.
You have any feel for the people in Iowa? Are they pro-homosexual marriage, anti-homosexual marriage? Do you have any statistics on this? Are they turning conservative? Are they turning liberal? Are they supporting the Tea Party movement? What's going on in the state?
Well, the state of Iowa would definitely be in favor of one man, one woman marriage.
Okay.
Put to a vote, we would be like the 31 other states that went before us, and we'd affirm it probably by a 70% plus margin. Iowa's a mixed bag, though. We're the state that sends Senator Chuck Grassley to Washington, D.C., and we also send Senator Tom Harkin to Washington, D.C. And those two are on opposite sides of the political spectrum.
Wow.
The Tea Party people here are having a voice. They are having an influence. Probably not to the degree that some of the other states around the country are, but they are definitely letting their voice be heard. And I think they're going to show up in a big way on this judicial retention vote.
Well, God bless you in the efforts that you're doing in Iowa for Freedom is doing in this upcoming election. I'm assuming that we're going to see a pendulum swing to the right, that is to the correct side of things, hopefully coming away from the liberalization, socialization of America we've experienced over the last 6-8 years.
Yeah, you know, and I believe we are. And Kevin, if your listeners would like to get involved or learn more, just tell them to go to iowaforfreedom.com, and they can learn a lot about our effort. If they'd like to sign up to help or assist us in any way, we sure would love to have them.
That's great. Appreciate what you're doing in Iowa. Bob Vanderplas from iowaforfreedom.com. Thanks, Bob.
Thank you, Kevin. God bless you.
And we'll be back in just a moment. Stay with us, folks.
I have always felt that doubt was the beginning of wisdom, and the fear of God was the end of wisdom.
Clarence Darrow.
The only true wisdom is knowing that you know nothing.
Socrates.
Belief is the death of intelligence.
Robert Anton Wilson.
If thou trustest to the book called the Scriptures, thou trustest to the rotten staff of fables and falsehood.
Thomas Paine.
Faith is believing what you know ain't so.
Mark Twain.
Whoever trusts in his own mind is a fool, but he who walks in wisdom will be delivered.
God.
The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom, and knowledge of the Holy One is insight.
God.
The fool believes his own ideas to be wisdom, but those who fear God and search for understanding find true wisdom. To lead your family in the pursuit of godliness, pick up a copy of the Proverbs Study Guide at generationswithvision.com.
Bottom line here is judicial activism is a way of life today, whether it be state or federal government, and it's been that way since the early part of the 1900s. Dave, you remember Buck v. Bell, where they determined that the governments had the right to impose birth control on the populace or on those that were deemed unfit by some American bureaucracy.
Well, of course, Kevin, when we formed this government with three branches of government, the idea was that the judiciary was going to be neutral. They were simply going to interpret the law where there was questions about what the law said or what the law meant. But from the very beginning, having that kind of judicial restraint has been a failing effort. To say that the judges at the very beginning were not expanding the law, making it to say things that it didn't clearly say, to the point now where judges gone wild could be a TV show. But in Buck v. Bell, we see early on an incredible, incredible ruling by judges saying that this woman, because she was an imbecile, did not have a right to reproduce. And that's amazing, and it should be astonishing to everyone listening.
You bet. And Roe v. Wade, of course, the classic example of judicial activism, deciding the Constitution has something to say about the right to privacy. Laws against abortion violate the right to privacy. And what about laws regulating growing, say, marijuana in your basement? Seems to me that's a violation of privacy. Or what about injecting cocaine into my bloodstream? After all, it's my body, okay? And the Constitution of the United States has everything to say about privacy and what I do with my body, and I don't want anybody telling me what to do with cocaine in terms of injecting into my bloodstream. Dave, what do you think? I mean, I think maybe some judicial activists could probably, do a favor for the pro-drug use, at least legalizing state drug laws.
Well, I think I could actually represent that in the Supreme Court before you, saying that that violates an illegal search and seizure of your person.
Sure, sure.
Your person, that would be your bloodstream and so forth. So it may be illegal to have cocaine in your possession, but not in your bloodstream. I could actually see arguing that kind of logic. Now, what's not being argued here, of course, is what's righteous, which is a whole other question now, isn't it?
Well, now we come to Proposition 8, another example. Oh, by the way, the National Day of Prayer was determined unconstitutional by another judge. You name it. You've got a judge out there to find something as unconstitutional and make law up as he goes. And the same thing has happened with Proposition 8. Now, back up for a second. Proposition or Amendment 2 in Colorado in 1992 was a resolution passed by the populace here in Colorado where it prohibited special rights for homosexuals. I remember voting for that. The election happened 9 months after we moved to Colorado in 1992. And the majority of Coloradans said no special rights for homosexuals. That went to a state court. The state court determined its own constitution unconstitutional, which, again, I can't figure that one out. But then, because that probably wasn't going to be upheld, they appealed it to the Supreme Court of the United States, and the Supreme Court of the United States tossed out Amendment 2 as unconstitutional.
Saying it didn't offer equal protection. Now, what Amendment 2 said was there was going to get special protection.
Right, special protections, right.
But
exactly.
Very interesting, it was Governor Roy Romer. I think you ran against for governor.
Yeah, I did.
It was Governor Roy Romer who led the charge against the constitutional amendment in the court system. Normally, a governor would defend a citizen's initiative. That would be his responsibility. But Roy Romer actually led the charge against it.
And there are plenty of judicial activists in the Supreme Court of the United States to overturn Amendment 2 here in Colorado. Now, fast forward to 2008, you've got Proposition 8, lovingly referred to as Proposition Hate by the homosexuals in California. And that passed in 2008. What would have that been? About a year and a half ago, almost 2 years ago now. And just recently, Justice Von Walker overturned that bill or that resolution and apparently held it as unconstitutional. And as I recall, the Ninth Circuit jumped in on that as well and said, hold on, we're going to repeal that to the Supreme Court of the United States.
Yeah, it's very interesting court wranglings here. It looks to some observers of the court what the Ninth Circuit is doing is actually going to make it impossible to appeal the case because nobody has standing because Governor Schwarzenegger doesn't want to actually fight the case. What we have, though, is a ruling against the people of Colorado who, by a legal process, voted to amend their constitution and went to a federal judge, and he said, well, no, your reasons aren't good enough to amend the constitution. In fact, his reasoning is unique. It's new, and the fly's going to land on me. Those of you watching on TV, you get the entertainment of the fly. And it pretty much ignored all precedent. And Von Walker himself is maybe a man who should have recused himself. But whether or not we get a hearing in court, we'll see.
Yeah, he's homosexual from all reports. And it's interesting, Dave, that Ronald Reagan appointed him to the court in 1986. And the guy apparently has had a pro-homosexual record from the beginning of his law career. So, you know, he was pro-homosexual from the beginning, appointed by Ronald Reagan as a judge in California, and no surprise at all that he wound up tossing Proposition 8 out the window.
Okay, but according to Wikipedia, he was nominated by Ronald Reagan, but his nomination stalled in the Senate Judiciary Committee. This is in 1987-ish time, because there was a controversy. He was representing a client who was being sued by the United States Olympic Committee. Turns out that his client wanted to use the name Gay Olympics, and his client was the Gay Olympic people. Yeah. And there was some concern whether or not a judge who was defending gay Olympics was the kind of guy we want serving on the bench.
Too bad that Ronald Reagan appointed him. I'd say on average, your judge in America is a liberal person. That is, he would tend to be more pro-homosexual, pro-big government regulation of every aspect of our lives, and pro-abortion. I think if you take 100 judges, you're going to find that the average judge appointed by a Republican, a Ronald Reagan, is going to be pro-homosexual, pro-abortion, pro-big government. Your average judge. Take 100 judges educated off the education mills, the universities, the colleges in America, law schools in America. You're going to find the average judge is going to be liberal.
Of course he's going to be liberal, Kevin. He works for the government. If you go all that law school, you invest all that money, a conservative, at least a fiscal conservative, a guy who wants to earn a lot of money is probably not going to go to the judgeship.
I'll bet you anything it'd be 70-30 on abortion. I'd say 70% of 100 judges in federal courts, state courts, will be pro-abortion. 70-30. That's my guess. Whereas, see, Americans tend to be more 50-50 when it comes to homosexual marriage. My guess is judges probably 60-40. 70-30 maybe? Your average judge in America is going to be pro-homosexual marriage, pro-abortion. Why? Because they went to the right schools. They went to the right law schools, the universities. That's where they learned what they believe. The average law school, I mean, Dave, the average law school, the average Harvard professor is going to be Democrat, liberal, pro-abortion, pro-homosexual. That's where these guys are educated. Now, granted, there are exceptions. There's the kid that goes to Harvard Law School. He winds up, you know, InterVarsity or Campus Crusade, gets saved, and gets discipled, learns a little bit about a biblical worldview, happen to watch How Shall We Then Live, the series from Francis Schaeffer, and turns out to be conservative. And maybe he drops out of that law school and runs down to Regent Law School, the Pat Robertson's Law School down in Virginia. Maybe that's what happened. But whatever the case is, the average kid going through the university mill, the law schools on the East Coast, the Ivy League law schools, are going to wind up being liberal, friends, because their teachers are liberal. Average professor in America is liberal. It's an 80-20 Democrat-Republican when it comes to your average professor and their political affiliation. Of course, the kids coming out of these schools are going to be liberal. And you take your average governor, and he's got the opportunity to appoint a judgeship somewhere in that state. He's going to pick somebody who's coming off the assembly line out of Harvard or Yale or what have you, and he's going to wind up with a liberal on his hands. And here's the bad news. The bad news is once he appoints the guy, he's in there for 18 years. All right, the populace doesn't vote him out. Typically, impeachment doesn't happen. So, again, the whole judge situation is pretty much locked down by the Ivy League law schools and the liberals that teach in these universities.
That's certainly true, Kevin, at the federal level. The circuit judges, the appeals judges, and certainly Supreme Court judges are dominated by the Ivy League schools, particularly Yale. Now, if you had gone to Yale, and let's say you had a quibble against homosexuality, well, maybe the president or the dean of the law school at that time, Alana Kagan, wouldn't graduate you because she's very pro-homosexuality. So you're not even getting through the Lawrence Trubs. You're not getting through the Alana Kagans to get through the very best law school to get to the bench. If you're going to Yale, it's similar. If you're going to, you know, some of the other big law schools in the country, they are dominated by the liberal academicians.
Isn't it funny how we always wind up in education again and again? You wonder, folks, why we make a big stink out of education on this program. While we talk about universities and colleges and the materialistic evolutionary worldview that is foisted upon millions and millions of people in these universities, that's because education is important. There's no sense in fighting the political battles if you're not willing to fight the battles in education, universities, and the K-12 schools. Education is the belly of the beast, and until we find ways to educate our young people, hopefully in a godly worldview in K-12 schools and elsewhere, we're going to wind up with people leading this country who are really, really liberal. Now, I don't know what the solution is to liberal judges, except as this guy says, Bob Vanderplant said in Iowa, you got to impeach him. You got to impeach him. Granted, there are no term limits for these guys, and they're never elected, and they're appointed once, and they're in there for 18 years, and typically they don't go more conservative as the years go by. They just continue living out the worldview they were taught in their law school program. And after 18, 20, 22 years, voila, it turns out that judges, on average, are far more liberal than the populace in the kinds of things they vote for in referendums and amendments.
Well, Kevin, I'm not sure it can be fixed at the current state, at least not quickly. And the reason is because the people who appoint judges are elected by the electorate. Now, let's say Colorado, for instance, is where we're at. Colorado, we have a chance. as an electorate to pass a righteous bill. Now, we did Amendment 2 before, but we have Amendment 62 on the ballot. And Amendment 62 will declare, if it passes, that a person is a person no matter how small. In other words, a person in the womb is granted legal personhood status. Now, something that wasn't granted to people with dark-colored skin in the South prior to 1865, but we're going to grant that to children. Now, what are the odds, Kevin, that the people in Colorado will make a righteous decision and make a righteous law to declare that people are people under the law?
I give it about a 50% chance, but what are the odds of it being tossed out by some liberal judge later on? I'd give that about a 90% chance. Folks, this is the situation we're dealing with right now. And the fundamental problem is the fact that we've got bad education systems educating people to violate God's law at every point. And more, or just as fundamental, is the fact that we've got people like Ronald Reagan appointing the wrong judges out of the wrong law schools. Personally, if I was president of the United States, Dave, I think I'd just pick, you know, somebody from Patrick Henry College to be a Supreme Court Justice of the United States, even though it's not Ivy League. I'd take somebody from Billy Bob's online law course to be Supreme Court Justice of the United States before I pick an Elena Kagan.
Roy Moore.
There you go. I pick Roy Moore to be Supreme Court Justice. There are a few, but the fact is we don't have principled leaders that are dedicated, committed, willing on their life, to appoint a righteous candidate to a position of judgeship in the state or in the federal level. Dave, we also got the problem of the Alliance Defense Fund recently coming up against Liberty Counsel on Proposition 8, and in the debate, turns out the Alliance Defense Fund is waffling a little bit. You've pulled up something on the internet about that. Why don't you read what the Alliance Defense Fund is doing in this case?
Well, the synopsis is the Alliance Defense Fund and the Liberty Counsel have two different philosophies about how to pursue the case. The Alliance Defense Fund wants to say that homosexual marriage is a bad idea, but homosexuality itself, not so bad. The Liberty Counsel really wants to make the statement that homosexuality itself is a scourge on society. So we have two different stratagems being used here, but mostly what we have is the Alliance Defense Fund, who generally fights for righteousness, not really wanting to stand by the law that is the law, which is the law of God.
Here it is. The ADF wouldn't wish to stipulate that counseling some homosexuals to change could be harmful, that homosexual partners form long and lasting relationships, and that homosexuality does not impair any area of life. Liberty Counsel was not willing to do so. So that's the quote off this story from LifeSiteNews.com. So another example of an organization that we thought was a conservative organization, at least in this case, is not willing to stand up on a principled level and say homosexuality is a sin, it is wrong, it is an abomination, and we're going to oppose it just on the basis of the fact that it is wrong, it is against God's law, it's as bad as lying, and maybe even worse than lying. It's a sin. It's wrong. We talk about lying being good and that some people can lie in decent, you know, long-lasting relationships. No, we just say lying is always wrong. And the same thing ought to be said about homosexuality, adultery, fornication, and all the other sins as defined by a biblical worldview. And that may be the real problem here, friends. People are not really rooting their beliefs in a biblical perspective on ethics. And that's why we bring it back to this point again and again on this program. Ladies and gentlemen, we're talking about reconstructing a nation from the bottom up, education, church life, the positions that conservative Christian organizations take on ethical issues. All of these things ought to be rooted in a biblical perspective on things. And I summarize these things in my book, The Second Mayflower. Would encourage you to get a copy of that book, The Second Mayflower, which is my vision for restoring a nation that is based upon the principles of God's Word. You'll get a copy of that book, The Second Mayflower, at my website, KevinSwanson.com, where you can hear this program anytime, anywhere in the world. That is KevinSwanson.com. This is Kevin Swanson, and I want to invite you back again next time as we continue to lay down a vision for the next generation.